Welcome to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is the Brown Bagger. My name is Reg Arkew. Today's show, we're going to be, is not meant in any way to go after everyone within religion or religion itself. Rather, it's meant to go after a select few corrupt elitists who've hidden themselves within many different religions and have used their positions of power to hurt, persecute, oppress, and obliterate anyone who may not agree with their twisted, out-of-date interpretations or unethical actions. With this said, I want everyone to know that I have friends who are Jewish, Mormons, Catholics, Protestants, Pentecostal, Baptists, and many other religions. I believe everyone has the right to believe whatever they want to, just as long as they do not use their religious beliefs to persecute, oppress, censor, obliterate, or use as an excuse to carry out war against another. For anyone who does any of these actions, I classify as a cultist, who is an enemy of the people and is against the ideas of democracy. As I finish saying this, I would like to share with everyone just a few outlandish comments that were said to me by a few cultists that I ran into in my life in the past. One of them was, if Moses would have done what he was told to by God, we would not have the problems in the Middle East. Another one was, if Canada ever elected a socialist government, we will send the troops in. And another comment was, if Canada ever had a civil war, we will send the troops in. Now, as a veteran of the Canadian Armed Forces, I believe in the sovereignty of Canada and the protection of Canada. I also believe, as someone who spent time in the United States, I believe in the sovereignty of the United States of America and the protection of American and Canadian people, for both of us are brother and sisters, and we should work together to create a better world. Now, with that said, I would like to introduce our guest today. Are you there? It's Steve Davis.
Good day. Hi, how are you?
Thank you very much for coming back on. And first of all, with the U.S. primaries for the Democrats and Republicans coming up in a couple of days, how corrupt is this process, and how does it affect the security of the United States and Canada?
Well, it's very much a media campaign program. In other words, what you hear in the news is basically how they're figuring the people are going to vote. And because of the mass ability of communicating on radio and other programs like you have here, the people are now getting second choices. And this is why there's been a big flip-flop of really nobody's got the lead in these primaries, only a few days away.
And how would this, with some of the candidates that are running at this time, who in your mind, with your experience being a private investigator and also your tremendous experience of all the evidence you've turned up in the past, who would you consider to be the most the candidate the most against the people's rights and freedoms?
Well, the most electable person who will get to the grassroots of people who are very concerned, in other words, these are the people who will actually stand up and fight. The only person really is there is Mike Huckabee.
And also, you had in the past, you're telling me how you've recovered some U.S. Treasury plates from Southeast Asia. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, during World War II, the President Roosevelt actually delivered to Chiang Kai-shek, who was the leader of the Chinese, who was a Christian. He was actually a converted person from Buddhism to Christianity back there in the 1920s. Anyway, President Roosevelt sent to him the actual plates of the Federal Reserve for printing press of the United States notes, Treasury notes. And so the reason why I got involved in the actual uncovering of this information, like I told you before, last month, was because of the high classified trust that the Chinese government had in my father, Clyde Davis. And so when I was over there in 2001 with the Royal Family of Japan, I found out that the Royal Family of Japan were actually financing the people of China to basically get these Federal Reserve notes back so they could deliver them back to the United States government, of which I'm very happy to say is progressing very successfully. If it hasn't already happened, it's still in the excellent process of coming true.
And you were also telling me in the past that members of the U.S. government became involved with the U.S. church out of Salt Lake, and you were telling me the reasons why. I was wondering if you could share that with the listening audience.
Well, the beautiful impact was the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls there in the Middle East and the Nag Hammadi Scrolls on the Nile River in the 1940s. Here are two ancient records that were discovered that go back just before the time of Christ and right after the time of Christ, in other words, 2,000 years ago, just in the 1940s. And through a beautiful process of getting these to actual people, scholars who wanted to find out what it stated, they basically came into the realization of what was being told 2,000 years ago is actually what is happening today. And based upon the discovery and the direct involvement of Steve Davis in the translation of these ancient records, I was able to show, because of the way I was able to translate these, how back then people were inspired about how to deal with contention, how to deal with fighting and whatever. And in other words, like I said before, last month is in 1995-96, the Vatican in Italy came forward and confessed that they'd had the Dead Sea Scrolls since the 1950s. And this was an open confession in St. Louis, Missouri by the Jesuits, where they actually displayed the actual Dead Sea Scrolls that they had in their possession. Now, this was a beautiful experience for the United States of America because of a litigation that three universities had done against the Vatican, and this was the terms and conditions, is that they would actually display the original records. Now, it's important to a lot of people in Vancouver now, because in 2 years from now is the Vancouver Winter Olympics. And in 2010, the whole world is going to be looking at Vancouver, Canada, and how they deal with the coming together of a world event and treating the people as a wonderful equal personality. And so that's why I'm really excited about your radio program, because you're actually educating the people in Vancouver how they will become actual ambassadors to truth, full disclosure, and operational as the world now will be coming in less than 2 years to Vancouver.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. And how long did the Vatican have possession of the Dead Sea Scrolls for?
Well, they confessed in the 1995-96 lawsuit settlement that they had murdered countless people. They had actually bribed and done it since the early 1950s, when they did actually acquire the actual Dead Sea Scrolls. The reason why I got involved into it directly is that here is a Missouri Jewish scholar by the name of Stanley Fretwell. Rabbi Reverend Stanley Fretwell, at the age of 19 years old in 1961, photocopied the Dead Sea Scrolls with a former New Jersey retired cop holding them up and taking pictures of them in 1961. So the great event of the Vatican coming forward and confessing it 30 years later in 1996, that they had had them since the 1950s, was a great breakthrough for the Americans and Canadians in actually knowing what truth is all about.
And who had them before the Catholics had possession of them?
They were going through mercenary brokers, basically people who were into it for a personal gain basis. And the fear and the reason why the Vatican got involved into it was because the people actually reading and translating the Dead Sea Scrolls was an actual evidence of identifying the great power and history that would be happening in these latter days, which basically identified the people in the United States of America, Canada, and elsewhere, basically talking about the Book of Isaiah. Book of Isaiah in the Old Testament talks about the isles of the sea. And the beautiful story about the discovery of America basically identified it as not being connected to the Bible or the Old Testament stuff. And so the excitement that came with the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls was basically identifying actual prophecy made in the Old Testament about the Americas.
Well, Steve, Ben has a quick question for you, my tech. Ben, go ahead, Ben.
Hi, Steve. How you doing?
Hi, fine.
A question for you. You mentioned about Isaiah. Now, the thing is, what is the reason? Because what I've noticed for people that now is that a friend of mine that I know that mentioned to me just today on the internet is saying that there's a girl that's been hit somehow. Can you explain to me more? See if you know about it.
Well, you know, that's fragmented information right now. So I'm sitting back waiting to get a complete information about the subject that you brought up. But with your specific mention of the book of Isaiah, this was just a person who actually accepted the responsibility of being a visionary person. And I believe that there's many visionary people today who actually get direction to help in their own personal way, their own personal ability, to help others know what is needed from God.
And I could, oh, sorry,
Steve. I don't know if that addressed it, but you know, I'm hesitant, but I'm fully aware that people are now connecting, people able to talk about things and events of today.
And could you tell our listening audience a little bit about Bill Gates, how he became involved with the Catholic Church and Microsoft?
Well, the system of communication is very important to any religion. And Microsoft, by far, is very reputable for owning the actual ability to do massive communication on a basic grandstand basis. The connections of Bill Gates deals with the Silicon Valley over in California and how it was connected to the actual involvement of my computer company in translating ancient records. Back years ago, a good friend of mine from Silicon Valley basically donated a lot of money to get the Vatican out of bankruptcy, out of basically bad money investments. And every time he'd write out a $100 million check, he'd go over to the Vatican and bring back one of their sacred ancient stuff that they'd been having there in their own sacred records. One of it was the personal handwriting memoirs of Julius Caesar. And here is the handwritten writings of a man who ran the Roman Empire just before the birth of Christ, talking about the people in the British Isles being more sophisticated than the British Empire, and how they could not conquer the British Isles, this is Julius Caesar, except by actually causing disinformation. They had much greater universities, much greater roads, made much greater institutional learning than the Roman Empire in the British Isles. And so the impact of this information got to Bill Gates. And Bill Gates, through his ability to assist the Vatican in its financial banking, which I don't know if your listening audience knows the history about the Vatican coming to the United States, but the Bank of Italy was created by the Vatican in 1905 in California, and it was called the Bank of Italy. And in the 1920s, Bank of Italy became Bank of America. And so Bill Gates has been working very closely in working with getting information that he is now being able to send out in a communicated basis for his own personal financial gain, stuff that's been located at the Vatican for many decades or whatever period of time.
And would Mr. Gates, I read an article that you sent out, would Mr. Gates own part of the Catholic Church itself?
Well, yeah, because Bill Gates has a lien. His terms and conditions for any type of contractual matters is security. And he comes in and basically does a massive, beautiful operation to improve an entity like the Catholic Church or any other religion or corporation by being able to communicate within. And so what he basically has, an exclusive contract, is basically dealing with communication within the Vatican, and he has access to all that information.
So, also with the Catholic Church, is it a large percentage of the diocese or there's embezzlement happening with a small percentage of over $500,000? I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, the setup of the Vatican that was created mostly because of liability here in the United States, because of diocese liability, basically created the operation of a diocese strictly limited and separate from the Vatican. And so the impact that Bill Gates had was to bridge over that, and so there's great liability coming back into diocese because of the joint venture things that go into it. But diocese now, because of lawsuits in the United States and elsewhere, because of corrupt or immoral paid clergy, basically have created an independent operation within the Vatican operation. And to overstep that, the government has actually tried to get Bill Gates to give his full disclosure upon his secret contracts with the Vatican based upon the communication information that he has, that he's gathered.
So that would also affect up here in Canada because of the residential schools where a numerous amount of Aboriginals suffered at the hands of not only Catholics United and also other churches.
Well, Bill Gates has access to the secret records and documents because what he's done is actually create a retainer of records for the Vatican in all dioceses. In other words, the specific Catholic Church operation in Canada, Bill Gates has access because he's the one who actually got it in computer downloading.
And yeah, and also Kevin Annette did a really good documentary called Unrepentant on the residential schools. He's a very, very brave individual, in my opinion. And what happened was, is as you're mentioning, Kevin was mentioning earlier that they're going to be closing off some of the records reference the residential schools. Could Mr. Gates be behind forcing the Canadian government's hand to start shutting the access to information off?
Well, that is the most likely move. Why they got Bill Gates is basically to compartmentalize and centralize all the information, and then basically he does an editing process and only allow what they want to have released as information out through him as an independent contractor. So what Bill Gates' company is most likely doing, and I would come to the personal conclusion as a private investigator, is that he's basically whitewashing and making it into a false form of truthfulness, basically to save them from individual liability.
Yeah, because as Kevin was pointing out, that the churches have been able to wipe their hands clean and left the federal government holding the bag. And what that's not only is that against the ideas of democracy, it's against the ideas of true ideas of spirituality and religion, because religion's not supposed to be to hurt people. Religion's supposed to be to help people's spirit reach a higher level.
Very good point. You know, it's been so tragic here in the United States since 1991, seeing the volunteer army service. You mentioned that you were involved with the Canadian Armed Services, but I've got thousands of friends who are either active duty or retired military here in the United States who were actively involved since 1991, since the Gulf War of the original George Bush Sr. and going over there in 91 era through today. And so for 16 years, this volunteer army, a great percentage of the people sees the problems that are doing by actually doing things that are not in the best interest of the United States.
Yeah, and also I read recently that the Veterans Disarm Act was passed by the Senate and the Congress. How does this bill affect the 25% returning U.S. veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan who are suffering from PTSD?
Well, the post-traumatic stress syndrome is a very serious matter for people trying to realize how to cope with peace when actually they were at arm's way day in 24/7. They actually knew that they were a target by people who would at all costs wanted their life. And for the period of time that they spent defending the rights of the United States, they find out that, gee, they weren't being told the truth after they come back, because they're actually finding out that they were lied to. And so it's very serious about how Congress did pass the Veterans Disarmament Act, is that they just went through during the Christmas season here with very little press coverage about that, and on a unanimous vote wanted to make them basically to not be liable to the volunteer armed people.
And also, with that act, does it say that these the veterans that have post-traumatic stress disorder are no longer allowed the right to bear arms?
Well, that was a remedy in making sure that they would be on a checklist because of several incidences that, thanks to lawyers, they actually create a precedence here in the United States in the court system, basically putting the blame to their involvement in Iraq to their own personal acts. And so this was basically a desperate act of Congress to protect them from actually voting to send the people over to war when actually it was a political act.
And also, isn't that a violation of the Constitution, because the Second Amendment states that the citizen should have the right to bear arms?
Well, the one thing about the law is that it deals with each case as an individual basis. In other words, those people who have money will be able to press forward their case. Those people are literally incapable financially or personally to deal with their rights are basically subject to the powers of the legal system.
Yeah, and as I was reading an article recently which talked about the Afro-Americans within the United States, that a percentage of them are beginning to lose the American dream and then fall back and into poverty. Have you heard anything on that?
Well, it's not a specific group. I'm sure it's a group that basically has been lumped together about depending upon another person taking care of them. I've been for many years very interested in how to teach people to deal with their own personal situation rather than blame it on somebody else. There's been a big racket that's come into the United States in the past 50 years that are called psychologists and psychiatrists. And this is a way to medically establish escape by blaming it on somebody else. And so, yeah, you've nailed a lot of big concerns there in Vancouver area with your own people to be aware that precedence is being attempted to be set up, that there's a scapegoat for every type of action.
Yeah, because in Vancouver, when the Olympics comes in here, we have about 5,000 homeless. By the time the Olympics hits here, they're talking about 10,000, up to 10,000 homeless. And one thing that's going to happen is you're seeing this, Mayor Sullivan has just passed this law last year. It's called Civil City. And what it does is it gives the cops the right to suspend people's charter and rights and freedoms if they deem it necessary. Also at the same time, what you're going to see is going to be happening like what happened in Atlanta Olympics. You're going to see the buses drive up and then take people right off the streets, throw them in the buses, and ship them right out. And that is not only that against the ideas of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, it's also against the Canadian democracy, the Canadian Constitution. And how can we be in what I'd like to ask is how can we Canadian troops be in another land talking about democracy when there's very little democracy here because of what's going to happen to innocent people?
Well, the best example of what you just cited was the Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City and the thing that just passed there in Italy. They actually had a martial law in Salt Lake City where they actually had a gun on every corner. I mean, Congress allocated $300 million for law enforcement protection in Salt Lake City during the Winter Olympics in 2002. And so when I was physically there, the actual task force director of the Winter Olympics personally met with me, and he said, "What are you doing, Mr. Davis, in Utah?" And I said, "Hey, I'm here to watch my son perform." And he says, "Well, do you know that your picture is on every corner in this city, that if a person sees your picture, that he has the license to shoot you because Interpol claims that you're a terrorist?" And I laughed, and I says, "Well, what do you have to do to offer for me to come and watch my son perform in the opening and closing of the Winter Olympics?" And he says, "Well, will you sign this document?" And they had already had a prepared document, and so I looked at it, and I smiled, and I wonderfully, happily signed it. And then I found out that the FBI basically had agents protecting me to make sure that I would not be shot. So I'm very much aware of what you're actually claiming with the concern of every citizen in Canada having the right to be protected, because as you know, in the Vancouver Olympics situation, the government and the people are liable for any losses in your Olympics like it happened there in Utah.
Yeah, and already they're talking of a deficit within the billions. If I could ask, who are the parties involved with raising those false those allegations against you, which were later proven to be false?
Well, I was able to get affidavits through a federal lawsuit. It wasn't my case, but it was through another case where a federal judge in Salt Lake City required the Mormon Church to disclose the affidavits that they had obtained claiming that I was a terrorist, because the FBI came back and totally vindicated me and says, "Well, you're not a terrorist. We've watched you for years." And so I was able to, in 2003, after the Olympics came and left Utah, to actually get documents that were with them, and it just all centered from the Mormon Church headquarters, where the Mormon Church president, Gordon B. Hinckley, basically claimed that I was a terrorist, and it went to Interpol. It went to the CIA, it went to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, And here are all these entities, law enforcement entities all over the world, right in October of 2001, just 1 month after 9/11, I was classified as a terrorist by the Mormon Church headquarters.
And if I may ask, who is Roger Billings?
Roger Billings is a gentleman 2 years older than me that went to the same high school I graduated in Provo, Utah. In 1966, Roger Billings graduated from Provo High. He went to the Brigham Young University. He did not graduate. He then got involved into technologies that he, in my own opinion, he stole from people. Anyway, he became a claimed, self-proclaimed doctorate of knowledge of energy, and he moved back to Missouri in the 1980s and set up a polygamous operation.
And how did the BYU and the Zion First National Bank, and also there's one called Novel.
How does
that tie in, Novell?
Right.
How does that tie in with Mr. Billings?
Well, Roger Billings had the very successful computer company called Billings Computer there in Orem, Utah, and it was worth something like $35 million. It was a public company, and he basically revolutionized the ability of summer jobs for professors. And during the summer, he would hire these non-working BYU professors, technicians that were very directly connected with Bill Gates. And he created a beautiful software program dealing with computer operations. And he was even more powerful than Bill Gates in the 1980s. And basically what happened is the Brigham Young University voted against him, and because of their stock position in his company, he lost his whole company, and he basically lost everything, and it became Novell, which became the number two competition with Microsoft.
Well, thank you very much for that, Steve. We're going to take a brief break, if you could stay on the line, and we're just going to take a break for a couple minutes. This is Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM. CFRO, you're listening to Monday Brown Bagger. We're now going to take a break.
I was waiting for so long. For a miracle to come, everyone told me to be strong, oh, oh, and don't shed a tear. Through the darkness and good times, I knew I'd make it through, and the world thought I for you. Wash away. soul and drown my fears. Let it shatter the walls for a new sun.
Yes, you guys listen to Monday Brown Beggar at CFRO 102.7 FM. And the song you guys were listening to, and that was a dedication out to the people out there, was a Celine Dion fan. And the song was called A New Day Has Come. And now back to Reg. Here we go.
Very true. A new day has come, a new day of truth, a new day of understanding. And hopefully people's eyes will open up and that we can stand against these elitists and say, look, we're not going to take it anymore. We want our countries back. We want the people to have the rights and freedoms that they're supposed to have. And with that said, I remember back in the late 70s, heading into the 80s and 90s, members of the CIA had become involved with the Pakistan Security Agency, who had allied with Muslim extremists. At the same time, these members of the CIA had backed bin Laden and other Islamic fighters who were fighting against the old Soviet Union in Afghanistan. What I'd like to know, if these ties between the Pakistan Security Agency and Islamic extremists could still be in place with members of the CIA, and if so, could the assassination of the former Prime Minister of Pakistan, Mrs. Bhutto, have been a possible way for these same members of the CIA to protect their drug interests out of Afghanistan and poppy crops? Also, could this assassination been a way to protect the interest of weapons productions who are making an increased profit since September of 2001 up to 400 to 1,000% off the sales of the weapons of mass destruction?
Good question. Directly related to the Central Intelligence Agency, many of my good friends I went to college with back in between 1968 and 1974 became CIA agents. And I've been in touch with many of them since they have left the CIA and elsewhere, telling me exactly that I've been a bullseye action on following the money trail. So what you basically identified is that there was a very political situation where the Russians or the Soviet Union needed to be defeated in Afghanistan, and so they actually went and recruited assistance, and so there were terms and conditions and contracts signed, and the best way to follow that is, where did the money end up? And amazingly, most of the money came back to Utah, and it came through Khashoggi. And Khashoggi basically was the gentleman from Saudi Arabia who built the Triad Center for KSL Television, KSL Radio, Bonneville International Headquarters for the Mormon Church television system. And he put in millions of money coming back there based upon the contract that they had with members of the Mormon Church who were CIA agents, who basically directed them to come back there and to assist it when they defeated the Russian or the Soviet military there in Afghanistan. So following the money trail, I went and pursued a key company in, that was connected to Khashoggi, and that is Barrick Gold. And Barrick Gold, one of the world's largest gold producers, basically take from people their natural resources and go forward. And there's a very famous Canadian Supreme Court case back in the 1990s, which dealt with a company by the name of LAC, L-A-C Limited, out of Calgary, British Columbia, out of your two western provinces there, that dealt with illegal theft of gold properties. And that became Barrick Gold. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the company that they stole the gold mine from there in your backyard basically won through the Canadian Supreme Court, because they basically showed how corruption can be exposed and they've got to face the consequences. The same is happening right now with the investigation of Ms. Bhutto. She basically wanted to give a full disclosure and wipe the slate clean by giving a full operation and forgiving Americans for what they did in trying to protect their rights. And so she had a game plan tied up with the American people that she would meet with that would to allow a very much restitution or a joint operation of saying, hey, let's get on in life and move forward. Well, the military cannot stand being found wrong or being found in the camp of many evil operators. And so you hit a very technical, very important thing that's going to affect Vancouver, Canada, is because there's a vast amount of investment coming there from the people who were directly related to this.
And do you see with also taking the CIA ties in with the Muslim extremists through the Pakistan Security Agency, in your opinion, when the U.S. embassies were hit in in Africa back in the late 90s, do you think that there was possibly some intel passed on to the Islamic extremists through this Pakistan Security Agency?
Well, the thing that was destroyed in 9/11 was Building 7. Building 7 was the headquarters of all this information you're talking about. And that building collapsed on September 11, 2001 without even an airplane hitting it. And so the destruction of this building there in New York City, which had what exactly the evidence and the information connecting people like Utah Governor John Huntsman. I don't know if you've heard the reports about United States doing export business with China. Now, in next year is the Beijing China Olympics. And amazingly, in 2007, export from the United States was $70 billion to China, of which here in Missouri, where I'm residing, $1 billion was with Missouri companies. And if you then take Mitt Romney and Utah Governor John Huntsman, you can find out that 10 times, this is a state about, what, one-fourth the population of Missouri, and they're doing 10 times the contract business with China. Now, why is that so? Well, you follow the money trail. And so what you're actually bringing forth is, here was a person in Pakistan who was working with Congress, people who were trying to seek the truth. And what she did and stated was, when I get elected here in Pakistan, we're going to basically have a full investigation with everybody connection. And somebody didn't want that to happen, did they?
Yeah. And also, I remember watching a TV program last year, and it talked about how there's the last American company that makes TVs. There used to be two of them. There's now only one. And what happened was, the reason for that is there's a large amount of stuff coming in, being shipped in from China. And what happened was, is that Walmart, when this company sued, Walmart sided with the Chinese, saying that they should have the right to import all this stuff. And they didn't side with the American company. I wonder if you could tell the listening audience how a little bit about Walmart and how the fact that they are owned by members of the Mormon Church.
Well, when Sam Walton passed away, his whole motto before he passed away was Made in America. I mean, that was the whole foundation of Walmart. And he would use American services and people and all like that. And basically, he, as a person who went to every community and all like that, and a very devoted Christian, wanted the people to just fess up and work in and be proud of what they made. When he passed away, of course, his kids went public. And the entities that took Walmart public and became its massive operation it is today was through wonderful finance maneuvering of both the stock market executives and banking executives that were connected to Salt Lake City. And they massively took and made these heirs of Sam Walton into billionaires, basically by giving them the opportunity to joint venture with entities like China and other areas that have slave labor. And so here was an American story of Sam Walton based upon his second generation, who took his motto and basically took American operations, American businesses, and put them out into areas which would finance the building of factories so that their people would be employed and remove the employment from people in America.
Isn't this an example of hollowing out United States, which therefore creates a shell with nothing left in the inside of the United States?
Well, they want to make the United States to be dependent upon the world. The biggest entity and motto here in the United States is sovereignty. And people are extremely proud with the right to bear arms, with the right of freedom of speech, with the freedom of religion, and all other the rights. And these freedom seekers have a massive amount of money, a massive amount of assets to fight those people who want to make America non-sovereign.
And also, if I may point out, Mr. Sam Walton, he sounded like someone who believed in what Frederick the Great from Prussia believed in. What he believed in was that if you allow your nation to import goods that are already being manufactured in your nation, then what you're doing is you're hollowing out your nation. So what Frederick the Great did was he said anything that's that can be made in his nation, he wouldn't allow in his nation.
Well, that's a sovereign expression saying that we can protect ourselves from within. And I think you in this beautiful talk of your inquisition of truth has basically hit a bullseye action of what people in Vancouver can do to protect their own household.
Yeah, I think that I think Canada and United States, because we are brothers and sisters, and we're both from North America, we should work together to make sure that both our nations stay sovereign under our own flags, and make sure that this North American Union, which is being proposed by a few elitists, we're not interested in it. We want to make sure that we have our two separate countries, which have their own national existence.
Well, Americans want to hear the Canadian voice about this specifically. I've been with countless groups down here in America who says, well, how come we're hearing very little from Canada?
And could you tell the Canadian listening audience right now about what's the effects of the North American Union are going to be on Canada and United States?
Well, they're basically going to remove the currency. First off, they will remove the currency and the actual stability of a person to have their rights. In other words, it's going to become borderless. And if they can do that within country lines, they can do that in county lines, in city lines, and actually in home lines. And so it's the first act of actually removing your own personal individual rights.
And what are some of the evidence that the Ukraine has about illegal CIA money laundering and secret deals?
Well, they basically utilized the CIA to remove their liability from the Soviet Union. And they did that through the ability of joint venturing, through sovereignty of their own individuality. Amazingly, because of their nuclear power plant devastation over there in Ukraine, they lost a lot of credibility that they were expecting to have had it not have happened.
And how has Channing been defiant, unclassified material, and ignoring an executive order since 2003?
Well, he has the executive order of immunity based upon his position. So anything that he does privately with any country, company, or individual, he claims of his own ability of being immune. And because of the records of presidents giving presidential pardons, I'm sure he's got something in his already hip pocket signed giving him that protection.
Well, we also have to remember that his office conveniently caught on fire recently, too.
Well, he's got people who are actually feeling like he's only out for himself and not for anybody else.
And what are some of the CIA dirty laundry that this agency has been hiding for years with in reference to assassination attempts, domestic spying, amongst other abuses?
Well, the greatest abuse is actually going into a foreign country and dealing with religious leaders in the foreign country. In other words, and this is the terrible situation of them recruiting a lot of returned Mormon missionaries from the Brigham Young University and other capacities, is that they would take these very innocent 19-year-old to 21-year-old boys and girls who went and served to preach church religion from a United States religion, and then they would recruit them to go back and set up a storefront like a McDonald's, like a whatever type of retail, wholesale, manufacturing store, personally finance them, this is the CIA, as they would then gather information to either gain support or covert operations of taking down companies, taking down people, taking them and making them basically compromise their standard.
And I remember in the last interview I did with you 3 weeks ago, you were telling the connections between Barrick Gold, Stephen Harper, Brian Maroney, Bush Sr., Dick Cheney, and also Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. Also continuing on, you were talking about Tom Wood, who had laundered $20 million to Canada. And I know that his trial has now been delayed till February. I'm wondering if you could also talk a little bit about this Corinne McNabb, who is from Edmonton, Alberta, and what ties does she have to Mr. Wood?
Well, McNabb was the actual processor of the $20 million. In other words, she would come here and actually put them into international banking deals. The problem with her ability is that she would put this into a contract service that, unless you were part of a cartel of a group of investors, you could not do it. And so most of the money, the $20 million that came to Canada through her, ended up with the CIA, because they would close down a banking investment program and say, well, the Americans cannot do it because Americans cannot launder money. And so they would collect and hold the funds. Well, in a few months ago, in a court with the state of Utah going against this lady from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, she cut a deal and she pleaded guilty. And in her plea deal, she says, well, Tom Wood, he wasn't a part of this program, and because they had taken all the money, but so much money, she made a down payment of what her $22 million debt was. And hey, the U.S. courts basically says, well, for this $200,000 payment, you don't have to make your $12,000 a month payment for many years. And so it was a plea deal business for her to protect Tom Wood, who was an agent for Zions Bank, who was an agent for covert operations like the CIA.
And what role did D. Kyle Sampson play in the firing of 8 federal attorneys? And also, how does he tie in with John Ashcroft?
Well, Kyle Sampson worked at the White House before he went over to work for John Ashcroft, the Attorney General, and he was over personnel there in the White House. And Kyle Sampson basically brought a lot of my own stockholder families of my company in Utah and employed their family basically to deny any support with me for the justice of exposing that. So by working meticulously with good people in Washington, D.C., we were actually exposed that all D. Kyle Sampson was an agent for Zions Bank, and for them to get an upfront, behind-the-scene advantage over any other entity. And so when all this information was exposed during the time of John Ashcroft, during the time of Alberto Gonzalez, the person running the strings in all this maneuvering was Sampson.
And also, how does the Utah judicial fraud going on affect Mitt Romney, and how dangerous is it to vote for Mitt Romney if he were to become the leader of the United States?
Well, Mitt Romney made a sworn statement when he was a 19-year-old boy that he would consecrate all his time, energy, and assets to the church. Now, when a Utah missionary goes to a Mormon temple and consecrates everything to it, he basically is bound by that action that he did as a 19-year-old in being very faithful to the quote-unquote the church. So here you have Mitt Romney, who was a stake president. I mean, this person is a high-level, prominent church leader in the Mormon church. And I just so happened to have been on an equal level with him as a Mormon bishop, who actually had to get involved with the same documentation level as him, as Mitt Romney back in Massachusetts. And you're on a higher law, higher level of secrecy in supporting your leaders. And so here, if Mitt Romney is elected president, he's under a sworn oath to support whatever his leaders of the Mormon Church tells him to do, or else he loses his ability to be an active member in the Mormon Church.
And could you see, in your humble opinion, if Mr. Romney was elected as a leader of the United States, could you see Mr. Romney handing over the possession of the codes for the nuclear keys and all basically nuclear bombs over to the leader of the Mormon Church?
Well, it's very practical to look at his past. He gained his vast wealth through his investment capital operation there in Massachusetts, using a lot of Mormon tithing money. Church revenue would go through his company for investments into losing companies, and he would come back and restructure these companies, and that's where he made his $300-400 million personal wealth. And so he, based upon his own money trail exposure of his wealth, can show you as a person where he would do it. And this is the key questions that should be asked to Mitt Romney is, well, did you use any Mormon Church funds or from members of the Mormon Church when you were amassing your wealth? And it's not being asked to him.
And also, who is Sterling Allen, and how could his death possibly have been caused by some type of electromagnetic beam?
Well, Sterling Allen isn't I'm unaware of what happened to Sterling Allen. I'm just aware that, the scientists, the various people who have the ability to lessen the cost of survival. These are scientists that are personal friends and people who have actually hired me as a joint venturist because they know of my high level of information. And I give them warnings. I give them warnings to document their stuff wherever they can and make it very public. And a lot of these scientists and people like Sterling would not do that. They feared and trusted man rather than fearing God, I guess. And the ability of taking people through an actual electronic device of stopping your heart or causing death is very well documented through CIA documents.
And how were members of the Israeli government reported to have been involved with the horrific events of 9/11?
Well, the fact of the matter is, after 9/11, there were a lot of Mormons who were employed in the Twin Towers who went voluntarily in church, their church services back there in New York and elsewhere where they resided, and they all confessed, and this is over 500, that for some reason they weren't there that day because of a call or a request or a recommendation that basically serendipitously took them away. And so we put together all these various meetings and discussions that have been reported back from these people who were working at the Twin Towers and find out that there had to have been a conscious knowledge of Salt Lake City about 9/11 before it happened.
And when my wife and I, Lisa, were in Las Vegas, we met many different groups who were from many different, like basically the Phoenix Project, think tanks, and numerous other groups. A member of one of these groups told me that the CIA had handed the Canadian government sophisticated surveillance equipment in the past, which the Canadian government improved and handed back to the CIA. With this thought in mind, how can any government agency in any part of the world say that 911 could have not been prevented if the equipment to monitor and intercept information was already in place thanks to the CIA and a few members of the Canadian government?
Well, the truth is now leaking out, and that's the beautiful thing of a discussion like this radio program, is that people can now feel that they're not the only ones who know what information that you're just describing. So So, yeah, it's an actual, a lot of Americans don't believe that 9/11 was an accidental thing that happened by some terrorists.
And I was also reading through some of this, the information you sent me, and could you tell us a little bit about the study that links lung disease to the World Trade Center collapse?
Well, the important of my massive amount of emails that I've sent up to you is to basically document a trail of sharing with you and your listening audience if they have a question. And the lung deals with the asbestos that was basically throughout the whole Twin Towers when it was originally built, began building there in the 1970s, and for many years they were told to clear it all out and to upgrade it. And it could have been very easily done by the modern technology over time, over decades of actually state-of-the-art technology to improve and reinforce building structures. Well, the time basis of selling the Twin Towers to a certain individual who then took out an insurance policy is just coincidental for his own personal financial gain. And for him to ignore the various warnings and requests and engineering studies that were right there on his plate when he was negotiating the purchase. I mean, here you have a person buying the Twin Towers and having all this stuff, and he negotiates the price down because they have been neglected to be done, and then turns a blind eye to everybody else when he says, I didn't know about it. So the key thing is what you're actually proposing, the connections of all this stuff is, people ask themselves, what's in it for me? If they ask that question, then they better stop asking what they're doing.
Well, thank you very much for agreeing to come on today, Steve. That was Steve Davis. We're running out of time. This is the Brown Bagger, which is heard on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. And thank you very much, Steve, for taking the time to inform so many people with so much information. And to all the listeners out there, have a beautiful day, and thank you everyone for tuning in.